since I lost my heaven. Put a fine dime kid, I'm on cloud seven. Cherry top lover with a chemical metal. Heater on high like a pot on kettle. Jukebox cops will raise it up another level. A young street apostles with a hallelujah pedals. Preachers in the bleachers keep on dancing with the devil. Swinging with a king like an Elvis made of velvet.
Bring the big beat back. Bring the big beat back.
See your lights, pop the dynamite, here we go.
Fire it up, fire it up. You're gonna hold in the sun till you get what you want. You gotta fire it up, fire it up. You're gonna hold in the sun till you get what you want.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show, Strictly Talks Hockey. Glad to have everybody with us here tonight. Glad to have everybody listening at home, on the road, in your car, on the bus, wherever you may be, here on the Hockey Show. Some new Def Leppard to kick us off. Again, I thought they had broken up and disbanded.
So did I.
According to this, brand new album came out May 27th, Diamond Star Halos. That's the song Fire It Up from that. So brand new Def Leppard for those looking to rock out to their 1980s rock stars.
Again.
Good tune, though. I got to say, it's got a decent kick to it. So might be a new song for maybe a hockey team or two to come out to next year.
Yeah,
maybe. Who knows?
I was thinking, right? Playing this to start the show and the Calgary Flames have just been eliminated.
Yeah,
that's fitting.
Who knows what we could do with that in terms of having it happen. But speaking of what we fired up, let's talk a little playoffs. We're going to get into a few interviews coming up here in a few minutes, but let's talk a little playoffs here, Jay, because, there was a pretty big game happening two nights ago. All sorts. Legitimately, first to 10 in terms of the way they played that game, yeah. As Edmonton and Calgary went toe-to-toe, nose-to-nose, mano-a-mano on that one, and certainly made it look... I won't say easy by any means, but man, that scoring goals in that series looked like it was going to be anything but a difficult proposition at that point.
Yeah, it looked like a junior hockey game where defense is optional and the goalies just take a night off. When people talk about how scoring has been down in recent years, this year's like the exception because it was like one of the highest scoring years.
Yeah.
But then you have a game like that where it's like, do we even have goalies anymore?
Well, yeah, I mean, can you really set the over-under on any of these games at 25? Like 24.5? Like, I mean, there's going to be 15 goals scored in every game, basically.
Yeah, especially with these two teams, like Colorado, Edmonton, wait, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are there, anything is possible. But these two, like Edmonton and Colorado, offensively incredibly gifted, and then you've got the Mike Smith Mikko Koskinen tandem with Edmonton always shaky, and then you've got Darcy Kemper.
I'm not gonna lie to you, that Mike Smith Koskinen tandem literally is Titanic floating through icebergs right there. You can make it, you can certainly survive with it, but there's probably a good chance you're gonna hit an iceberg at some point.
At some point. I actually found this out recently. I think it was like the second straight series where Ken Holland, one of the Edmonton Oilers, have faced a goaltender that Ken Holland has tried to sign and has been rejected by, leaving him with Mike Smith because they wanted to get Markstrom.
That is correct, yeah.
And had a deal in place, and then Calgary made him the offer that he got.
Right.
And when he went over there, and they tried to get
Darcy Kemper. Yeah.
But then Joe Sakic comes in and grabs Darcy Kemper, and they're left again with Mike Smith.
It's going to be tough for that one. I was surprised, I was surprised last night the Rangers got away with so much I shouldn't say they got away with so much. They just outskated a Tampa Bay team I thought was going to come out a little hungrier, but I mean, you could tell they had a lot of rust on them yesterday just by the way they played that first period. They looked completely out of sorts, and you kind of went, all right, it's going to be a long night for Tampa if this keeps up, and it was.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, like watching the game, It's one of those games where it's like the analytics and the eye test don't really line up a little bit too well. To Tampa Bay's credit, they had some incredibly high quality chances throughout the game that I don't have the expected goals in front of me, but it was basically the Igor Shesterkin show, because they had just, from where they were shooting from, were just piling on great chances, and Shesterkin just kept it going. He just was a brick wall, and then he had the other side where the Rangers were not shooting. They had a few chances from really solid areas, like good high trap right in front of the net, from the just outside the trapezoid, or not the trapezoid, kind of that home plate area, getting high quality shots, not blocked in really any way, and they were just going in. They just weren't getting as many of them as Tampa was, and it was that young guns line for the Rangers just was unbelievable.
Well, and that power play is just I mean, since the Pittsburgh series, that power play has literally been carving up teams. But we have to discuss it because everybody else has discussed it, and certainly I'm sure you have thoughts on it. Kale McCarr's goal, offside or not? I've already watched the replays. I know exactly what I think. I've watched the Dave Jackson explanation. I've watched the explanation from the NHL. I'm not arguing with any of that. I'm not disagreeing with any of that because I think that the NHL can say whatever they want.
Yep.
I have a significant problem. And Ray Ferraro talked about this prior to the season starting, about how the wording in the NHL rulebook has to change.
Yes.
Because you can make the claim that McCarr chipped that puck across the line.
Yeah.
But he didn't chip the puck across the line, though.
I mean, when you slice it down and you go frame by frame, you lose the flow of play, and you lose the it's why I don't like when people just pull, when there's a questionable hit, where people just pull whatever frame makes the argument that they want to make about whether a guy's feet were up, whether his arm was up, whether like the head was the principal point of contact. Because when you go frame by frame, you can just pick the one that tells the story you want to tell. But when you're seeing it at game speed, I think we shouldn't analyze things on a frame by frame basis where we like Zapruder film, like view it like where it's a forensics investigation.
Yeah,
we should watch the replays, watch it at game speed, because then you understand more around what the intention and what the flow of play was like. Then you can make the assessment of, did he have possession or not?
Did he chip it is the question.
I, looking at it, at the time I was like, that should not be a goal.
I think 99.9. Again, I have no problem with the actual essence of the rule. If you're going to actually say that he chipped it in, I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But to say he chipped it when it was literally a few millimeters off of his stick is stretching the essence of that rule.
He still had possession.
Right. Exactly.
This is the thing. We need a definition. Like, to Ray Ferraro's credit, he was talking about, the funny thing is, he got a response from the NHL, and they basically said, it's too hard to change the rules. It takes too much work, so we're not going to do it.
And I was like, what?
That's your job.
You're kind of in charge of the rules.
Pay somebody to do it. But the idea that, you know, we need a definition of what, if this is the problem, then we need a definition of what possession is.
Right. Well, we're not going to get one anytime soon.
Because
if it's
puck on stick, then every team has a minute of possession every game, because for the most part, the puck's not directly touching your blade.
Well, the fun part, though, and I guess this is maybe where we can have a little bit of fun with it, is that we don't need anybody to clarify our outs for what happened here, and we're going to bring one guy in. Dave, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Oh, Dave, you're a little far away from the phone there, Dave. I'm just going to turn your volume up a little bit.
I'm in my vehicle. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, there you go. That's all right. How's everything going out in the great rectangular province today?
Oh, the weather's pretty nice. It's a little windy, but temperature-wise, it's pretty good, yeah.
Good, good. That's good to hear. Nice to hear that things are going well out there. Unfortunately, St. Louis took the exit at the hands of the Colorado Avalanche, so we're going to get you to do your exit interview here today, Dave, and give us the thoughts. So when you are ready, sir, we're going to get the music on here, get the exit music going here, and then when you're ready, sir, you can go ahead and give us your thoughts on the St. Louis Blues. When you're ready.
Oh, is there music?
Yeah. Yeah, you probably can't hear it, though. That's okay.
Okay. I thought it was, they had two really good series. You know, they kind of handily took it to Minnesota after the first loss there. And when Binnington came into play, I think that was game four, And then he went on a bit of a run there for five games, and then game six gets injured, and Husso comes back in, and I think after that point they were kind of in tough against Colorado. Maybe if Binnington was healthy enough, he could have maybe carried them through that. But, you know, the high flying power of Colorado, you know, is pretty tough. But, and then again, you know, Tarasenko forget the other guy's name, but like Tarasenko didn't put up a whole pile of points, you know, considering he's probably the highest paid guy on the team, maybe. And,
yeah.
But Ryan O'Reilly and
Dave Perron.
David Perron there. Like they were their best players, you know, clearly, you know, put up all the points, and, you know, Perron with his hat trick against Minnesota, and, you know, but yeah, they didn't have the depth scoring there. And I saw Braden Schenn, you know, I think he had 9 assists or 8 assists, but he had no goals throughout the series, which, you know, if he could have thrown a few in the net, that definitely would have changed probably the outcomes of a couple of those games. So, I don't know. I think, yeah, it's kind of tough to say, but I think they were probably happy with how they did, all things considered, you know, when players get injured. And Torrey Krug was out. You know, so that doesn't help things either, too, right?
No, that doesn't, no. I'm not going to disagree with any of that. I think that's pretty accurate. I think that, again, what you said about secondary scoring is probably actually fairly accurate in that the year they won the Stanley Cup, they had all sorts of offense from their blue line as well. Pietrangelo was fantastic. Parayko was fantastic back there. They got almost nothing. Again, Krug being out didn't help, but they got almost nothing from their blue line in the two series they played.
No, they didn't. Yeah, there was not a pile of scoring from the back end at all.
Were you a fan of Jordan Binnington tossing the water bottle at Nazem Kadri?
I guess it kind of makes you laugh a little bit because it is just an empty water bottle and it never hit him. But it, you know, in the same sense as why did he do it type thing. But, you know,
because it's Jordan Binnington.
I think things can get blown up in a hurry, but I guess it is what it is.
Right, exactly. It is what it is. No big deal.
No harm, no foul, right?
Right, exactly. You can't go wrong with the way they played anyway in the playoffs. Again, ran into a good team in Colorado. Nothing wrong with the fight they put up there. And
certainly
they played extremely well. And you kind of hope that St. Louis is going to, you know, maybe surprise a few teams. And they certainly, I mean, for me, I think they did. Jordan Kyrou was unreal. And I think that he's got a huge future there. Rob Thomas was kind of invisible as well. I thought Rob Thomas from the Stanley Cup run they had a couple of years ago to this year's run, not the same player.
No. But, and Buchnevich, he didn't really do a whole lot either, which, right. You know, you kind of expected him to probably be in the top three or four of the team scoring.
Yeah.
You know, or five maybe even. But, yeah, he was kind of non-existent at times too. So that, you know, it doesn't help when your top guys aren't putting the puck in the net. So.
No, it doesn't help for sure. But Dave, you won a couple of challenges. We're going to get you those prizes. I'm going to have a large box of stuff coming to you because there's a mug that we had given you a while back that we're going to replace as well. So we're going to give you that as well. So got a pile of stuff coming your way as we made our way into the room here today, into the booth here today. So keep your eyes peeled for that stuff. A lot of stuff coming your way in terms of the challenges you won because you did have, again, an outstanding playoff. St. Louis had an outstanding playoff for challenges with the first hat trick. And I can't remember what the other one was.
First upset, I think.
Yes, first upset. That's correct. Yeah, first upset.
Yeah,
in the playoffs. That's right.
Yeah.
So you had a couple of players show up, a couple of team, or your team showed up for you and got you a couple of prizes there, which is at least a little bit better than some of the other people ended up with. So congratulations on that. Looking forward to you know, having you back next year if you want to come back too. So
yeah, well, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun. You know, I kind of do follow the Blues a little bit just because of the Saskatchewan guys, but you know, maybe I wouldn't have followed them as much, you know, had I not picked their, you know, that number. So, it was awesome. It's exciting, you know, and it's fun little, you know, Survivor Series to be a part of. So
I didn't want to tie this together at all, Dave, and I know that this may be, you know, sacrilege to mention it, but does it kind of, you know, give you a little bit of pride knowing that you got the team that could have been the Saskatoon Blues at one point after St. Louis had almost lost their team in the early 80s to Saskatoon?
Well, yeah, kind of. You know, you always think about it, right? I've heard the stories, you know, all growing up, and you know, over the years now that, and I'm obviously involved in the university hockey, so yeah, we always talk about things like that too, right? But I also got a friend down, you know, he's from St. Louis, so he, you know, I kind of give him the gears of once in a while about all the Saskatchewan guys, and, you know, could have been the Saskatchewan Blues, and so, yeah, it's pretty fun. So.
That's fantastic, yeah. So... always good to have you on board, Dave. Glad that you were able to play this year and get in and get a team this year for sure. So, like I said, we'll look forward to it again next year for sure. And hey, take care of things out in Saskatoon all summer. Well, I'm sure we'll talk at some point, and we'll get ready for hockey in October then for sure.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And if I don't see you before then, we'll see you in the rink hopefully this winter. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll talk soon then for sure, man. Have a good one, eh?
Yeah. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
So there is Dave from Saskatchewan, who's a fantastic guy and certainly good guy to talk to as well. But we have to, unfortunately, bring Jeff in to send Dave home.
Yep. Travis spoken.
As St. Louis makes its exit there, so that'll be good. We have another interview coming up a little bit later, waiting for somebody to get off work before we can bring that person in to do another interview. But our third interview today, our third exit interview today, was supposed to be Ethan. Ethan is actually, he's a young man. He just turned 12, so happy birthday, Ethan. Want to make sure we get that out there. Happy birthday,
happy
Ethan.
Birthday.
Ethan is currently at Ultimate Practice right now, so he won't be able to do it. So he has gratefully, respectfully asked Jason to step in for him to cover the Carolina Hurricanes. Jason, do you want to take a swing at the Hurricanes here?
Sure thing.
All right, here we go with the song, and when you're ready, sir.
Well, once again, the Carolina Hurricanes cannot get past the second round. I know Rod Brindamore's probably very unhappy about that fact. But yeah, it was, I think, his exit his interview obviously said a lot. Calling out the players, not having elite scoring. You've got a guy like Svechnikov, you've got Aho. Seth Jarvis is starting to develop, and I think the talent is there to produce and to produce in key moments. I don't know exactly if it was there, but they also ran into a lot of trouble with their goaltending, obviously, because, you know, you get into Game 7 and you lose Antti Raanta, and you've got your third stringer in there, Freddie Anderson, who has an injury history. He's had trouble with that in the past. Antti Raanta also had injury history, so you kind of know what you're getting into when those are your two guys. As great as they are and as great as they play behind that Carolina Hurricane system, it was just... it broke wrong for the Carolina Hurricanes. It's still a great team. It's still a promising team. And they really just couldn't put it together and knock off this kind of Cinderella story that is the New York Rangers. It was absolutely wild to watch. I thought this series was going to end a lot earlier than it wound up ending. And obviously that whole not being able to win on the road, whatever was going on with that, really did not help this team.
So, again, we can look at the numbers. We can talk about the numbers all we want. Here's where things went bananas this year.
Yeah.
Okay? This is the craziness. If you didn't read the article that I wrote about them, here's the insanity. This season, Carolina was first in the NHL with 25 road wins, tied for first to 25 road wins. 20 of 24 games they played were won in regulation time. So they know how to play. They can play on the road. They're not a bad team on the road, right? The road goal differential was plus 29, where they scored 3.46 goals per game while only giving up 2.76. So again, they're winning healthily. They have no problem scoring goals. They're having Sebastian Aho was the most lethal Hurricane away from rally. 23 goals and 38 points, including 15 even strength goals.
He was huge for my fantasy team this year. 26, I draft him every single year, and every single year he pays off.
26 even strength points. Five more players were in double digits in goals as well, so Carolina wasn't having trouble scoring goals. Where they struggled, though, and this is where I want to point everything out, and people can go, oh, that's just you know, fluke of numbers. Freddie Anderson was the guy who did the most damage while wearing white this year. I say that. He was 17-8-1 away from rally. Raanta was 5-3-3, while the three goaltenders, Kochetkov, LaFontaine, and Raanta, were 8-4-3 total away from rally this year. So Freddie Anderson was legitimately the guy who was winning those games on the road for them. Mm-hmm. Not that he was the only guy doing anything, but having strong goaltending certainly helps. And he made a huge difference on that.
And that's where it sucks, because he basically rushed back. He injured his MCL in April.
Right.
And rushed back to be here in the playoffs. And this is a similar thing that happened with the Toronto Maple Leafs, where he was injured late in the season and rushed back for the playoffs and was not able to make it through.
And again, I'm not going to dump all this on Ranta either, because, I mean, again, there's defensive problems that, oops, the Carolina has to take care of and stuff as well. Ranta went from a 2.87 and a 900 save percentage in the regular season to a 3.96 goals against average and an 872 save percentage in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That is ugly.
Yeah, you can't have that. You can't have that and expect to challenge for a Stanley Cup, especially when you're facing off against a young, gifted team like the New York Rangers.
And we talked about how bad their special teams were throughout the playoffs. They were 19.6% in the regular season, so basically 1-5 in the regular season. Their road success in the playoffs, 4.2%. That's ugly.
Ow.
Ugly. So you can talk all you want about Carolina and not having struggling on the road. They did. Legitimately, they did. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you can't win without at least a half-decent goaltender, and Ranta just didn't give them that, at least away from home. At home, he was a little bit better.
Yeah.
But away from PNC Arena, they just didn't get the goaltending they needed.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird things that you can't really explain. Like, it's one of those magic hockey things where I don't know if it's just, like, it got into their heads or whatever, but it just dogged them the entire time.
Well, it did dog them, and it ended up costing them. So let's bring our boy Jeff in again.
Travis spoken.
Carolina heads back to the mainland now, and they're off Survivor Island. So there we go. We got one left to do. Calgary is coming up. We're going to have that one probably in about 10-20 minutes or so. But yeah, Carolina's done. Rangers moved on. Rangers already have a 1-0 lead. Got to say, playoffs are looking pretty fun. Speaking of being under pressure, though, Arizona Coyotes under a little pressure today.
Oh, man.
Jay, I think you want to have a chat about this, so we will.
Oh.
For those that don't know, I'm going to take a quick breath here and get myself set up for this, because this is insanity. The Arizona Coyotes decided to have a hearing with City Council in Tempe, Arizona, all about the land and where they want to build the arena and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. I have no problem with that. Usually these are called rallies, and rallies are usually meant to save teams, which is technically what this is.
Yes.
Technically. Not a true rally. They won't call it a rally, but let's be honest. This is what it is. They sent out they put out a website. They published a website that basically anybody from Tempe could go onto, and they sent it. I believe they sent it to their season ticket holders. I could be wrong, but I believe they sent the link to the season ticket holders, where it basically said, here's what we need you to do. Send this predetermined sort of line of thinking to City of Tempe's procurement administrator. Mm-hmm. Gave the email out. His name is, and again, I'm not going to try and out him, but his name is Michael Green. Was on the website. Michael Green was supposed to receive all of these emails from people that had all of these various reasons why the City of Tempe should approve the arena project.
Yep.
Okay, makes sense in terms of what they're going to do. The problem is every single one of those reasons was the same rhetoric crap that we keep hearing from every other arena owner.
And most of them are
NHL owner.
Are lies, mischaracterizations, or misrepresentations.
So we're going to go through this point by point, because we did this a little bit before the show and we were talking about back and forth about it. I think we could have rattled off probably about an hour's worth of information on this just alone. But point number one, the Coyotes will be the first ever privately financed arena in Arizona, unquote.
That's not true. Not the fact that there hasn't been one, the fact that this is not a 100% privately funded arena.
Right. It's only partly true. The arena will be paid for with private funds. Not going to deny that. But everything else around it, all the infrastructure, all of that, is going to come out of city coffers by virtue of city sales tax revenues and increased sales tax revenues.
Yes. So they're going to be ratcheting up the to make up for what would be a budget shortfall, they're going to ratchet up the property taxes.
That budget shortfall is $200 million.
Uh-huh. We have to build roads. They have to shore up levees. They have to remove waste. They have to build all of the things that aren't there to support the arena, because they're not there because nobody wanted to use this land because it's a landfill.
And we'll get to the landfill in a second. But here's the question then. If you're a city, again, imagine you have property in Tempe, Arizona. Imagine that you legitimately don't go down to where the arena is going to be built. Imagine you have no interest in going down there. You're not a hockey fan, whatever. I mean, you're listening to a hockey show, so I think you are, but whatever. Legitimately, would you be in favor of $200 million of your money going to the Coyotes to help build their little project? Or would you be in favor of $200 million going to, I don't know, road repairs, sewer repairs, hospitals, schools, fire departments, public transit, police departments, all of the important things that your city can use if they're going to raise taxes?
I know I would. Throwing random money around,
I'm not very happy about it. If you're going to raise taxes, it better go to something that I can use on a daily basis, at least.
Or something that benefits you in some way. Because if they don't want to raise, if they can't raise the taxes, you know what they're going to do? They're going to run a deficit.
And
they're going to run a shortfall. They're going to make cuts to schools and hospitals and police and fire and road repair and all of those great things that you need to have a functioning city and a comfortable city to live in.
According to Pat Garofalo, director of state and public policy for the American Economic Liberties Project, a nonprofit group that frequently analyzes public subsidy deals, quote, they are very much a money pit for taxpayers, unquote, referring to stadiums and arenas.
Yeah, any economist will tell you, specifically sports economists, there is no benefit. They talk and talk and talk about all of the benefits, all of the business, all of the whatever. It's shown time and time again, it is a money pit, and it actually costs cities in the long run.
Point number two, the project will bring 6,900 new permanent jobs to Tempe. Jason, I already know you want to take a swing at this one.
Yes, that does not mean 6,900, 365 day a year, 52 weeks a year, full-time positions, because they didn't mention how many FTEs or full-time equivalents that is. That is 6,900 outside of groundskeepers, maintenance,
security guards.
That is concessions people, that is parking attendants, that is game day staff. That 6,900 is not 6,900 full-time jobs where you make a high amount of taxable income that goes straight back to the state and city. That is maybe some kid working a part-time job.
Right. Now, they said, well, some of that's going to be because of the surrounding businesses and stuff as well. We're going to bring those people in. So 6,900 jobs, including the... But again, if there are no businesses that are moving into those spots, there is no jobs to be had.
Yeah, they haven't...
You can't promise something that doesn't exist.
Exactly, because you're basically selling fairy dust at this point. You're promising that this thing is going to happen when the city has no guarantee that companies are going to want to set up shop there. They're not having any guarantee. Like, what they should have done, and what I said before the show, is you should have approached a bunch of stakeholders, a bunch of companies, and said, we're going to build this thing. Will you sign on to this project and agree that you will set up a business here?
Right.
Collect a deposit. Right. Do whatever you need to do to make that happen. But they didn't do that. They just made wild promises.
Because it's easier to make wild promises than do any of the work. Point number three. This project will finally clean up an old landfill, approximately 1.5 million tons of trash, unquote. Partly true in its sincerity, I will say that.
Yes.
But I'm going to caution everybody that this is legitimately a pipe dream, because we're talking about cleaning up 1.5 million tons of trash that's biological waste, that's inert waste, that's waste that legitimately has to be moved elsewhere because it cannot be disposed of safely, that you're going to have to transport this stuff somewhere else. It doesn't just magically disappear.
Yep.
You're not disposing of it and you're not cleaning it up. You're just simply
moving the problem somewhere else.
Right. And if you're not moving, if you are going to do remediation, the cost for remediation on, and again, they talked about this, it's 30 feet deep at this landfill.
Yeah.
30 feet deep. The cost of remediation on this, because it's next to a levee, is going to be astronomical.
Because there are state, local, and federal laws and regulations around economic or ecological preservation that you have to worry about when you do things like this. That means extra costs. That means extra safeguards. That means extra everything to actually get this done. So that's adding more and more and more and more money. And we already saw with the Calgary Flames
that
basically remediation costs basically sank that project because the remediation costs rose and neither side wanted to cover it.
Tropicana Field, when they built that field in Tampa, St. Petersburg for the Tampa Bay Rays, this example just baffles me. They estimated it to be $70 million and the remediation costs came in at triple that value.
Yes.
Triple the value. $210 million. That's the same amount of all the infrastructure you want to build.
Yeah.
And we're talking about it against a waterway now in Tempe.
And that is also 90s figures, so that doesn't factor in inflation.
Right, exactly.
And that doesn't factor in 30 years of different changed regulations because we started to pay attention to the planet a little bit more.
Baffling, but keep going because here's the next one. Quote, nearly $2 billion of private investment to Tempe, unquote. And again, I want everybody to pump the brakes quickly because Alex Marullo has already guaranteed that $1.7 billion of private money will be used to build the arena. If you were talking about nearly $2 billion, $1.7 is pretty close to that.
Yeah, pretty much all of it, actually.
The problem is that $2 billion of private investment to Tempe isn't going to help the Tempe economy in any way.
No.
It's going to make a one man a lot richer, and that's Alex Marullo. Because
yes.
He owns the arena. He owns everything that goes on around it. He owns everything that goes on in it. He's going to make money every time somebody puts their foot inside the door. So this isn't $2 billion of private investment. This is $2 billion of making money.
That's not $2 billion that goes to the coffers of Tempe, of the city of Tempe. It is $2 billion that goes into a money hole that is then going to pump out money to the Marullo family.
Right, and that's all it does, but neither way, shape, or form. And anyway, the whole idea, and again, I'll say this right now because this was in the Investigative Post. They were talking about Buffalo's new NFL stadium that just got approved, and it's like another billion-dollar project. Quote, spending upwards of $1 billion on a new NFL stadium will result in more revenue for the league and team and an increase of the franchise value for the Pakulas, which, again, referring to the Buffalo Bills. Again, the league and team benefit. The owners of the franchise benefit. The city of Buffalo does not benefit.
No.
So let's get over this idea that it's $2 billion of private investment. It is not private investment. It is legitimately the Marullos investing in the Marullos.
Yeah. And have you covered the $215 million?
No, we'll get to that in a second. This is the next one. So from there, Jason just sort of preempted this. Quote, no taxpayer dollars are at risk, unquote. Okay? No taxpayer dollars at risk. We already know that's a lie because, again, remediation costs are going to be skyrocketing. Infrastructure costs are going to be skyrocketing because, again, everything costs more now. There is no way to say this, but if you're pumping in $1.7 billion and leaving the rest of whatever needs to be paid for up to the city is going to lose big time on that one.
Yes. Yes.
Big time.
If you are going to, you're basically paying for this and you're not going to be seeing any profit from that for 30 years.
So this is where Jason's talking about now. Quote, this project is an economic generator of $215 million of net new taxes for Tempe over the next 30 years, unquote.
That's not true because it's going to cost $200 million to do it. So then it's going to take almost 30 years to make up the money that you already lost while also paying upkeep costs in the order of tens and hundreds of million dollars over that 30 years.
So let's just be naive and say you're going to spend $200 million to make $215 million. Is that the return on investment that you really want to make?
That's $500,000 a year.
Right. This is ridiculous. That doesn't even pay for one street's repairs, let alone a whole city's worth.
And, you know, the NHL, by law, or by the CBA, forces the Marullos to pay more than that every year for one of their players.
Right, right.
They have the money.
Andrew Zimbalist and Roger G. Noel wrote in a Brookings article that I found, quote, In every case, the conclusions are the same. A new sports facility has an extremely small, perhaps even negative effect on overall economic activity and employment. No recent facility appears to have earned anything approaching a reasonable return on investment. No recent facility has been self-financing in terms of its impact on net tax revenues. Regardless of whether the unit of analysis is a local neighborhood, a city, or an entire metropolitan area, the economic benefits of sports facilities are de minimis, unquote.
Here in Winnipeg, we have constantly been hearing and talking about how we need to revitalize the downtown core. The Winnipeg Jets coming back did not help anything. It helped the restaurant that's in the arena, but nothing else. People go there to go to a game or go to a concert, then they leave.
There are, and I will say this only because I've been there a few times, there are a few restaurants that do benefit around there, just because, again, the locality of it, right? But we haven't seen, and again, I'm not going to say this to be mean to people, but we haven't seen any sort of proactive response in terms of the homelessness that's down in the downtown core. We haven't seen anything in terms of the poverty in the downtown core. Yeah, it's more expensive to live down there now because the Jets have moved in and they built all these brand new buildings. And hey, you can move in if you want at an exorbitant rate of...
That only makes the problem worse.
Right. This is the whole problem. So we're talking about not revitalizing a downtown, but literally now gentrifying a downtown that didn't even have gentrification before.
Exactly. You are pushing people out of that. You're basically, like they're doing with the landfill, you're just pushing the problem somewhere else.
Exactly.
You're hiding it from view.
Point number seven, quote, Coyotes are incorporating inclusive areas for people with varying abilities, unquote. So congratulations, the Coyotes actually told the truth on this one. They were able to read the 2010 ADA Standards for Accessible Design, which by law is included in the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990.
They can follow the rules, guys. Hey, they can't pay their rent, but they can follow the rules.
Hey, you know what? We better put this in or else.
Yeah. You can't pay your taxes, but you can sure follow this legislation.
Adding that in is almost a slap to the face to people who have varying abilities in terms of being able to manage, you know, whether it's stairs or anything like that. That's almost a slap in the face because they're basically saying, look what we did.
You're doing the bare minimum. Good for you.
Like, that shouldn't even be mentioned because that should already be part of the design.
Yes.
Already be part of it. Anyway.
They just needed to fill more of the page.
Final point is point number eight. Sports brings people together, building community bonds and local pride.
No, it doesn't.
It's civic pride.
Literally does
it's
not.
The civic pride argument by the Coyotes that everybody tries to roll out. And the answer is civic pride does nothing to save the schools, does nothing to save libraries, does nothing to save hospitals, does nothing to save any of that. I don't care how proud of a team you are. I don't care how great a team is. If there isn't money being spent on your local infrastructure from public funding, guess what? There is no social services to be had.
Sorry, how much of the city of Winnipeg's annual budget comes from civic pride? Oh, none? Oh, that's great. That's great. Oh, yeah, we're proud. We have a sports franchise. We're proud of the sports franchise. Good for us?
But that's exactly the point, is that legitimately you can be proud of your sports team and not spend a dime of public money.
You can be proud of your city without a sports team.
To me, this is just ridiculous. So as it comes down, as it's set right now, the Arizona Coyotes are pleading their case to Arizona City Council. Whether or not we hear anything back tonight will be interesting. But
they're basically asking to rob a city blind.
The artist rendition alone legitimately was hard to believe, because it would have ended up that the commercial area that they sort of outlined is, as we heard the airport say, it's less than a runway's distance away from the main runway on the airport.
Yeah. And aren't they trying to build apartments there?
That's the whole thing. They had apartments, they had all sorts of buildings, office buildings and stuff that were built up there. So I have no idea what they're doing. Arizona legitimately, the Coyotes are legitimately the most dysfunctional franchise in all of sports, in that they had an opportunity to build an arena and they went ahead and built an entire complex that not only ruins all the zoning, mm-hmm. but completely takes away one of your major infrastructure projects. Oh, I don't know, the airport.
Yeah. The thing that actually brings money into your city, because it brings people from other areas of the country or other parts of the globe.
Even if it's
city.
Not, but even if it's not that, I mean, you're talking about major cargo destination in terms of being able to distribute, you know, packages, mail, all that kind of stuff. Like, this is important stuff.
And when the guy from the airport came in, what was it, $13 billion is their payroll?
Yeah. $13 billion annually is their payroll in terms of what they do there.
That's money for the city. 50, that's money for the 50, community.
56,000 people on their payroll.
Yeah.
What?
Plus local businesses that operate within the airport and contractors. That's something that brings in money to the city.
I'll let you have a minute here, Jason. But yeah. I know you want to tee off on this, but sum this up. Arizona Coyotes, should they, I get that the NHL doesn't want to move them, but should they have a new arena? Should they be moved at this point?
They should not have an arena. We have this. The Coyotes should have been moved months ago. When we found out that they were not paying their players on time, they should have been moved. When we found out they weren't paying their taxes, they should have been moved. When we found out they had lost another arena, they should have been moved. When we found out they weren't paying their rent, they should have been moved. When all of those articles from The Athletic came out about the chaos and the strife that's going on inside the Coyotes organization with the Marullos there, the team should have been moved. This team, I feel horribly for the Arizona there's legitimately people who love hockey in Arizona. There are fans in Arizona who want to watch this team, but they are being taken advantage of by this franchise. They're getting taken advantage of by the NHL, by the Marullos. They don't deserve this, but the NHL does not deserve to have this franchise there anymore. We have functioning NHL standard arenas in a bunch of different places. Move them there. Stop the clown show.
Well, it's gonna be decided one way or the other, it sounds like, in terms of this hearing, whether or not it goes through. I'm almost certain that, and I hate to say this, I'm almost certain that the city of Tempe isn't going to turn this down because they see it as a chance of growth. Whereas I look at it and I go, you guys just didn't do any of your homework.
You deserve
to fail.
You didn't ask any of the other cities that have done this.
But the cities that they compared themselves to, and again, we saw Shane Doan on the thing, and he compared, you know, to Los Angeles, which Tempe is not, to Tampa Bay, which Tempe is not. Like, they went to 14 other cities and or whatever it was, or 12 other cities or whatever it was, to find out exactly how they sort of built up their arena area. And you kind of go, but those areas aren't that great. Those cities that did it aren't that great. What are you doing?
Yeah. And all of the arenas, the more recent arenas that have been built, have been 100% funded by the people that own them.
Wow.
Because they're making that investment that is making them money. They're not saying it's a good business person will spend money to make money. They will make the investment to profit the most. That is not the Marullos.
It has been documented time and time and time and time and time and again. This is a bad investment for cities to get into. They legitimately should really rethink this. The city of Tempe would do a good job right now to say, stop talking, build it yourself. We're not going to give you tax breaks. We're not going to give you any money. We'll give you tips on infrastructure on how we want to see things built in order for it to fit the city landscape. But this is all on you. Period. Done.
When there is another billionaire who is just fronting the cost in your state to get things done the way they want it to, there's no excuse.
It's a new low for the Coyotes, but we'll see what happens on that. Speaking of hitting new lows, one team hit a new low, and we have the third interview coming up here now as we found a young lady who's no longer working. Let's bring her in all the way from the northern climates of Canada. Jenna Thompson, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, we're good. Try to get Danielle. Danielle had Calgary. Danielle opted to let you speak for her because she said that she's not really into the whole hockey idea, but loved to play in the game. And I said, well, you don't have to know anything about hockey. Just talk about whatever you want. She deferred to you still. So,
yeah.
So we're going to let you handle the Calgary Flames, a team that your Edmonton Oilers beat to move on. Yeah, so Jenna, if you're ready, are you ready to rip on the Flames a little bit?
I think so.
Okay, when you are ready, the music is now playing. Have fun and knock it out of the park here.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know what to say, but I mean... I don't know. First series, didn't watch too much of, I'm not going to lie. I was watching Edmonton instead. When it came down to the series against, you know, the Oilers, I think all around it wasn't their best. I don't think they played terrible. I don't think they did great. I think Markstrom had a tough time. Maybe wasn't ready for the speed of the Oilers or whatnot. But I think all around, they probably could have done a bit better when it came down to like line matching, just their speed, their consistency. I mean, Tkachuk with 3 goals in the first game and then only 1 point for the rest of the series. Like, I don't know. Doesn't seem too great. All around, just not consistent enough for me. But, I mean, their top line was struggling, whether that comes down to line matching again or what. But, again, if their top line's not producing, you need some of your more depth of the team to come through, which didn't seem to happen for them against the Oilers. And, yeah, that's about all I have right now.
That is fair. You are right. The big dogs got a feed because Goodrow and Tkachuk didn't really have a lot of points in games 2 through 7. So not going to deny that. But, again, I'm not arguing. I don't think you're wrong about this. The speed certainly hurt Calgary. But you would think for a team like Calgary that plays Edmonton, I don't know, like 12 times a year, they would probably be expecting that speed a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you play them enough, you know what you're getting into in these games, and you know they're going to be intense games, they're going to be whatever you think, but it seemed to be, like, what it looked like to me was just the speed. But again, they should have been prepared. They haven't done too terrible against Edmonton the rest of the season, so yeah.
It is what it is in terms of the loss there. How are you feeling about Edmonton tonight?
I'm super excited. I don't know. I think they got this one, but maybe just because I want to win.
That could be helpful. I mean, it doesn't help giving up 8 goals, though, to the Colorado Avalanche. So you're going to need Mike Smith to show up maybe just a little bit more.
I agree. I think, I mean, Colorado's obviously a very strong team. So it is what it is. But, yeah, Smith is going to have to do a bit better than he did last game.
Yeah, that's for certain. Yeah, we'll have to make sure of that. But before we get you out of here, how's everything going for you? Are you settling in up there now? Is everything good now? Yeah,
it's going well. I'm finally in my apartment. It's been almost a week now, so that's kind of nice. But everything's going well. It's a cool place to be, that's for sure.
And cool, not just because of the weather, right?
Yeah, it's actually, you know what, yesterday was like 16 degrees, so it's pretty warm. Nice. But the 24-hour sunlight is real hard to get used to.
That I can imagine, strange. Yeah. And then in the winter, it'll be the 24 hours of darkness, so.
Yeah. Even worse. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. We'll touch base then. But
you'll make it. That'll be all right. Again, we're going to follow up with you. Again, not that everybody has to worry about you too much, but we're going to follow up with you again when hockey season starts rolling around because we want to hear about the hockey scene up there. So
yes, perfect.
Keep checking that out and let us know how that's going for sure. But thanks for doing this, Jen. And let's hope that there isn't an excellent interview at the end of this round for you then, because who knows what could happen at that point. So we'll see what happens tonight, see what happens as the series rolls on here. But always good to have Danielle. And Danielle, if you're listening, she did a good job. You could have done a good job too, but she did a better job. So because she actually did it. So perfect. I'm just kidding. Thanks for doing this, Jen. And we'll get caught up soon in terms of everything that happens in the playoffs here still. So.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. There goes Jen, who did a good job there in terms of covering off Calgary and having some fun with that. Let's bring Jeff in, though, and we'll send Danielle home for the rest of the playoffs.
Travis spoken.
As Jeff gets us ready to go for round 3 here now, so we're good to go. Got a few smaller stories coming up here now, Jay, as we blew apart Arizona there for a while. You ready for these?
Oh, yeah.
Let's dive in, because this one didn't even make the news until today, and I don't know if people actually realized it, but Gatorade cut ties with the NHL.
Excuse me, what?
Gatorade cut ties with the NHL today because the NHL and Gatorade could not come to an agreement on the amount of money that it would cost Gatorade to remain as the official sports drink of the NHL. Gatorade is no longer going to be seen following this season in the NHL. That's no more water bottles and no more bottles of Gatorade on the bench.
What?
Gatorade is out.
The NHL just keeps taking L's. How do you not?
So Gatorade is going to shift branding now. Shift branding. Now, this could be interesting because I think this is a really good idea. Towards college sports deals, investments in women's athletes and competitions, as well as the metaverse. They're legitimately going to put more money into women's sports, women's athletes,
and into
college. Well, the virtual reality part is kind of dumb, but you could see for esports, maybe that's where they're heading towards. But for college sports deals, I think could be enormous for a lot of teams.
They do have, because energy drinks are really huge in the esports scene.
Right.
I believe they're getting into energy drinks as well.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, their drink being a little bit healthier, better for you than a Monster or a Red Bull. But it is a mistake on the NHL's part because this is a league that won't do the hard work to fix their or rewrite their rule book so it makes sense. But this is big on Gatorade for just...
We're not going to pay that crap, that money, that amount of money that you want in NHL. Like, that's basically what they said is we're not interested in that at that price.
Yeah, and they're making a change that I think in the long run is going to pay out way better than a relationship with the NHL would.
I don't know if you're aware of this as well. Icing, as he's known on Twitter, Hanran Singh, who does all the great job for CBC in terms of all the play-by-play calling, he's receiving an honorary Doctor of Laws degree from Mount Royal University.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he'll get that on
to him.
He got that on, June 1st, he got it. So there you go. So congratulations to him.
Yeah.
A couple of local guys getting some awards as well. WHL honored Matt Cockle, as Executive of the Year, the GM of the Year with Lloyd Saunders Award, and James Patrick was named Coach of the Year in the WHL.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well-deserved for the way the Winnipeg Ice played this year.
For the way these two guys set up that team, that's absolutely well-deserved. For those that may want to laugh a little bit more at the Coyotes, last night in Quebec City, junior hockey game was happening in the QMJHL. 14,563 people showed up for that game. Arizona will have 5,000 max next year.
The Videotron Center is an NHL-caliber arena, and they don't have a team?
14,563 at the Videotron Center last night. That's three full houses for the Arizona Coyotes in three games.
Actually, more than that, because they're only going to have 3,500 or whatever.
The standing room only guys or whatever. That's fine or whatever. For those that are asking, in terms of former Jets, Sammy Niku, currently averaging a point per game, eight assists in eight games. He's tied for second in scoring among all defensemen in the AHL as the Laval Rocket get ready as the lone Canadian team in the conference finals in the Calder Cup. So not the saying that I want to pull for Laval. I'm not a huge Montreal Canadiens fan, but hey, got to cheer for the Canadian team that's still left. So
totally.
Let's go for Laval there. Breaking news out of the East Coast, UPEI, who saw their head coach retire at the end of this season in terms of what went on. Bruce Donaldson's been there. He's been there for 16 years behind the bench for the UPEI Panthers women's hockey team. They got a new head coach this week, named as the new bench boss, former Manitoba Bison's interim head coach, Sean Fisher. Sean
Really?
Fisher will now be the UPEI women's hockey head coach.
Interesting.
So Sean, who was over in Europe, he was over coaching in over in Austria, I believe, for a while or whatever. He was out coaching out east as well after leaving Manitoba. He saw the opportunity and grabbed it. So good for him.
I mean, they got to see a little bit of his coaching when
they were there.
The Bisons were there. So
that's right. And Sean, I mean, take nothing away. Sean's a great preparatory coach. He legitimately prepares very well for games.
Yeah.
He's a good video guy, very organized in terms of how he wants his team to play, runs good structure in terms of his systems. Again, I'm not going to criticize him too much or whatever. Mm-hmm. Roster management maybe a little bit could touch it. But again, he's been coaching in a couple different places now, might have improved upon that, might have certainly seen how to get that better. But Sean's a great tactician on the ice. He knows how to coach this game, and UPEI is going to get a great coach coming out of a year where they were literally one of the best teams in Canada.
I mean, he's walking into a great situation.
Yeah, and they played extremely well this season. So, hey, UPEI, Sean Fisher, there you go. So Good on him.
He gets to go back to Charlottetown, and he's going to stick around for a while.
There you go. Canadian women's para hockey team, for those that don't know, the sledge hockey team, they're going to represent Canada at the World Para Ice Hockey World Challenge in Green Bay, Wisconsin, USA, from August 23rd to 29th. One Winnipegger on that team. That's Alyssa White. You may have heard of her. We talked a little bit about her on this program 3 or 4 years ago when she was like 12 and made the team. She is now on this team for good. She is by far the youngest player on this team. Second youngest player, I guess. There's a girl who's a little bit younger than her, born in 2008, but another girl in 2007. But she is one of the youngest players for sure and is definitely an up-and-comer. She's going to be one of the better players for moving forward. But awesome. A chance for the women's sledge hockey team to really go out and show that they know how to play the game and play the game really well, which is nice to see. For those that, again, that are asking and looking at promotions and going, hey, the women's game, you know, getting bigger and stronger, Megan Duggan, I can't even read my own writing here. Megan Duggan was working with the Devils, been in and around and doing some stuff with New Jersey. Mm-hmm. She has now been promoted to the Director of Player Development.
Women moving up.
34-year-old retired captain of the U.S. national team that won a gold medal in 2018 is now in charge of player development for the New Jersey Devils.
That is awesome.
She's holding the same job that Haley Wickenheiser holds in Toronto, that Daniel Goyette is working for in Toronto. This is legitimately two of the best players to ever suit up, male or female, two of the best players now holding prominent roles in NHL jobs.
That's incredible.
Prominent hockey operations jobs. That's the key, too. So,
and going back to the Arizona thing where they were talking about how the Coyotes have the largest like female presence in their front office. That's not true.
It's not true, but...
Because the names that you mentioned are making
waves. I mean, look at what Vancouver's done with. They got assistant GM. They got Cammy Granato. They got Rachel Dory. They got tons of women working in the front office in Vancouver now, so... Want to congratulate Team Manitoba. They were at the 2022 Canada Para Hockey Championship in Leduc, Alberta. They finished fourth. So congratulations to Team Manitoba on that as they get themselves set. And Jason, you'll recognize a few names off this list because the IIHF Under-18 Women's World Championship is about to start in Wisconsin in a few weeks. Names that we recognize from the Female World Sports School Challenge are all over this list. Names like Alexia Aubin. You might remember her from Stansted College.
Uh-huh.
You might remember a name like Carole Préfontaine. Préfontaine was fantastic at that tournament as well. One of the women we didn't get to see, although she was not listed on the setup, was Sarah Swiderski. She's from the rink Kelowna. She was actually taking a university tour, campus tour, that weekend, and she wasn't there. Or at least I don't remember her being there. The other big name that you probably do remember, though, and she legitimately caught our eye just because not only her name, but because of how well she played, Jada Ginla.
Something in that family, man.
So this is a team that's coming with some very strong, man. Very fast, very good players.
Oh, that's going to be a good team. That's going to be a really good team.
Yeah, it is. For those asking, again, most of these women are already set to go to all sorts of different NCAA schools. There's not very many that are going to be going, unfortunately, to the Canadian side of stuff. But Alexia Aubin is only 16, or only turning 17. She is going to be recruited by somebody probably out of this tournament.
Oof. 17.
Yeah, 17, and she legitimately is better at hockey than anything I could do in my life.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is. So... But that's pretty crazy in terms of seeing that. So there's your quick updates as we get out of here. We got about a minute left here. Jay, you want to make a prediction on the score tonight? What do you think, 12-10?
I'm going to go 13-9.
13-9. Yeah. Look at that. I do want to bring this up just before we get out of here. Starting in June, starting not the next week, but the week after. So not next week, the week after. We're going to play a new game, a new fun game on this program where we legitimately select... a famous name in hockey that attended this school. And we'll give away clues as to who it is, but they won't be your general, like, oh, he played for the Nashville Predators or something like that or whatever. It's not going to be that. It's going
not
to
be Stu Grimson every single week.
Again, it's going to be harder than that. It's going to be a very difficult questionnaire where you can phone in and request a clue from us. You can phone in and ask for a clue. We'll give you a clue, and then you can either guess or hang up.
Like, but just hockey?
Just hockey.
Okay.
very famous people.
The list of football is going to be really long.
Very famous people. I want to stress this a little.
Oh, people.
There are people that did not play here who went on to have other stuff, but they've done other things within the hockey community here in the University of Manitoba.
I have a couple ideas.
There's a few ideas, but we're gonna play that game starting in 2 weeks' time, okay? And we'll have one every week for a couple of weeks after that, and we'll give away some prizes with that. So if you if you want to guess, you're welcome. You're more than welcome to guess. But the idea will be that if you want to know who this player again, we'll just okay. You can start guessing. We'll open up the phone lines. You can get in and start guessing at that point if you want. But if you're interested in getting that, you can legitimately call in and go, "Hey, I'd like a clue on the player," and we'll give you one clue to figure it out.
That's cool. I like that.
Okay. So that'll be fun. So we'll get all that figured out. We got to get out of here right away. Free Range Radio Skippy coming up right away. I'm going to get this basically done for another week. Happy to have everybody along again. We got to get Taryn out here because we basically are eating up the hour for Skippy now. With that, folks, we're out of here. Again, going to lead out with Def Leppard's Fire It Up, a great new tune from them as they get set to release, or they just released their album on May 27th. So here is Fire It Up with Def Leppard as the Hockey Show makes its exit here on 101.5 UMFM. Realize like a dynamite, here we go.